This is River to River. I'm Dean Borg, sitting in for Ben Kiefer. Today is literally River to River, our state border communities. Beginning our July series on Iowa communities, we're looking closely at the special advantages and the challenges of cities on the state's borders. We'll be talking with representatives of Sioux City and the Quad Cities, how they cope with differences in state laws relating to taxes, business nuances, and incentives, even differences affecting health care. River to River, today Sioux City to the Quad Cities, following NPR News. Dean Borg with River to River. Living in a border community has its perks when it comes to developing a career or finding a perfect living situation, but along with the advantages are some nuances taunting the business communities and also in economic development. We're looking today at some of those characteristics in Sioux City and the Quad Cities, and I'll be talking later in the hour with business leaders in the cities bordering the Missouri River and the Mississippi. But first, some insight into a program targeting border communities to encourage business growth. It's called, and this is a long one, Targeted Jobs Withholding Credit Pilot Program. Big name for a program providing tax credits to companies choosing to locate on the Iowa side of the border. Iowa Public Radio's Jeff Schmidt talked with Tim Whipple and Tina Hoffman of the Iowa Economic Development Authority. Jeff asked Mr. Whipple to describe the program.
The Targeted Jobs Program was set up in 2006 by the Iowa legislature. The goal of the program, what the legislature would like to see this program accomplish, of course, is to help border cities compete with our neighboring states, particularly ones that might have a better tax climate or a better business climate. The program works in the following way. There are five pilot project cities that have been designated under the statute, and no more can be designated technically. It's a pilot project. It's a pilot program for now with just a few cities that are eligible. But for the cities that are eligible, they can enter into contracts with businesses. Those businesses have workers that work in the business and pay income tax withholding payments. A percentage of the income tax withholding payments from those workers that they would otherwise make to the state of Iowa, to the Department of Revenue, actually is diverted to the local pilot project city. It goes into a special account there, and then the pilot project cities can use those funds for economic development.
What cities were originally targeted on this?
Well, the statutory criteria does not list specific cities. It lists some general criteria under which different cities can be eligible. But the current pilot project cities that have been designated are Burlington, Council Bluffs, Fort Madison, Keokuk, and Sioux City.
And what does your data show as far as how effective the program has been up to this point?
That's one thing that the legislature really needs to take a look at this year, and they have scheduled a tax expenditure review committee study for this program, and that's one thing they'll be taking a look at. But each city has a number of jobs that have been created or retained under the program, which is a requirement to use it. Each city has a different amount of capital investment that the projects that they've contracted for have pledged to create. So the economic development impact tends to vary. I will tell you, for example, that Burlington uses it a lot less frequently than Sioux City uses it, for example, and that there's been a lot more in the way of capital investment and a lot more in the way of job creation and retention up in Sioux City than in Burlington.
And we hope to hear more about that. We're going to have the folks from Sioux City on a little later in the program. You said pilot program, and you mentioned briefly the duration. How long does this pilot program go for?
3 years ago, it was extended until June 30, 2013. So it expires at the end of this fiscal year. And when we say expire, what we mean technically is that these pilot project cities after that date can't go out and enter into any more agreements with businesses to do the withholding. But the agreements that have already been created have a 10-year duration. So it will continue to go for a while, even if the legislature doesn't extend that date.
And once again, any feedback that your office has received from some of the individual communities on the effectiveness of the program?
I'd say in general they all feel like it's a valuable tool, and they're grateful to have it. They're glad the legislature created it for them. We hear quite frequently from Sioux City. They've used it quite often. They really believe in it. They believe it gives them a real leg up in competing, particularly with South Dakota, where there's no corporate or individual income tax. So, you know, Sioux City really believes in this program. Fort Madison has made good use of it as well. I think they really believe in this program. Other communities, Keokuk has used it for quite a few retained jobs. So I think our judgment is that the more communities use it, the more they believe in it. And there's different levels of usage, but I think all of them would probably tell you that they'd like to continue the program.
Jeff, I think the only thing I would add is that, I mean, certainly the legislature understands and we here at the department understand that these communities are in a unique situation because they are on a border of our state and dealing in a competition standpoint with a totally different business climate. So in the way of trying to do something unique, I mean, I think that's why you see this called a pilot project, because everybody involved was looking to kind of level that playing field a little bit. So, you'll see it used differently depending on what business climate the competition is coming from or talking about. So that's an interesting standpoint of the project as well.
Is something like this unique to Iowa, or do we have other states focusing on this as well that may some of the businesses could be at a disadvantage depending on tax structure of bordering states?
I think there are other states that have created withholding-type mechanisms. I think Missouri did one recently. Here in Iowa, we have other withholding programs to fund economic development. The withholding diversion is just one way to fund economic development. You can fund economic development through straight-up tax credits, through sales tax refunds, with direct assistance and loan-based programs. So the uniqueness about it in Iowa economic development programs is the way that it particularly focuses on the border communities. That's really the unique element to this program.
And once again, you commented on the legislature, when they gather again, is going to take a strong, hard look and look at some numbers and see about taking this forward?
That's right. We and the Department of Revenue both are right now compiling data and numbers to provide to the legislature. They need to make a judgment about the return on investment for this program. They will consider the number of jobs that have been created or retained. They'll consider the amount of capital that's been invested. They'll, of course, consider the cost, because at the end of the day, these are revenues that would otherwise go into the state's general fund that aren't going there today. And then they'll have to make their own judgment as a legislature about whether the amount that the general fund is foregoing, whether that is worth it, given the benefits that have accrued to these border communities. And, you know, that's something really that only the legislature is going to be able to assess, you know, from a political standpoint or from a standpoint of the communities in central Iowa that don't get the benefit of this program versus the border communities that do. And so we don't want to we don't want to encourage or you know, push the legislature in one way or another so much as we want to provide good objective data to them about how many jobs have been created or retained, and which businesses have been helped, if that's public information, and just make sure that they know which communities and who in those communities to talk to so that they can come up and talk about the local benefits. And then we'll just let the legislature decide if this is a program that they want to continue to support.
This is Dean Borg, and we've been listening to Jeff Schmidt's conversation with the Iowa Economic Development Authority's Tim Whipple and Tina Hoffman. I'm going to bring on the line right now Barbara Sloniker. She's the Executive Vice President of the Siouxland Chamber of Commerce. Hello, Ms. Sloniker.
Oh, good afternoon.
You heard, I think it was Tim Whipple who made the comment, and I made a note of it when he said it. Sioux City, you mentioned you specifically, really believes in this program, that targeted jobs program. Was he right?
Yes, definitely. And while the Chamber and the economic development arm of the Chamber, which is the Siouxland Initiative, are not the administrators of that program, the City of Sioux City actually does that. We work very closely with them, and we've seen, you know, many projects come to fruition that we believe would not have without kind of having this extra tool to compete on the borders.
Barbara, can you give me an example of that?
Well, sure. Well, the most recent would be Sabre Communications, who actually just broke ground in the last week of June here on a 150-acre site, a $28 million expansion. And they did a nationwide search. They did have a facility here, but they have facilities in other parts of the country, too, so that those also made sense for them. But this is one of those things, the targeted jobs, that kind of at the end sort of put us, you know, help to keep us in the game, put us over the edge, so to speak. And so they are taking advantage of that.
Was that of special value to you, though, because of your uniqueness right along the Missouri River on the border?
Yes, because for them, you know, to move from our area to Nebraska or South Dakota, even though they had a plant here, you know, very easy too, you know, nationwide to move back to Louisiana may be different. But so, yes, keeping them here, and they did, you know, they did explore, so nationwide. So Iowa won out, and that ended up helping retaining 200 jobs and creating another 200 jobs.
Is it sort of, and I'm not condemning it in this way, but is it sort of kind of a leg-up program and in fact, sort of predatory?
No, I don't see it that way. If you're talking about as opposed to the states that we're competing against?
Yes, yes.
Well, no, because, you know, each state has their own set of their own business climate to begin with. For example, as you know, South Dakota, no corporate income tax, no personal income tax. I mean, you know, they have just a great business climate to begin with. But even so, on top of that, South Dakota still has economic development incentive packages. Mm-hmm. The state of Nebraska has been very aggressive and very successful at attracting. So, you know, this is what they do, and the state of Iowa is really starting to come on with that, and we're very happy to see that.
You're fortunate to have that tool then.
Yes, yes. Yes, it does. It does help us compete.
Barbara, let me just deviate here just a moment. And as I was thinking about talking with you, you know, in the central part of the state, people in Des Moines consider them to be the Golden Circle, and the eastern side has the greater population density. How do you feel? How do you regard yourself out in the northwest, sort of anchoring position there? Is it sort of lonely out on the border?
well, we're in an interesting, unique position out here, if you will. But, you know, the things that Iowa is known for, hard work ethic, you know, business being done, people to people, those things are all across the state. So I think, you know, we can build sort of on the successes of seeing, you know, where the population is and how the Des Moines area is grown. And, you know, we can hold that up as a model, too. And, you know, we understand where we are in our population size, but there are great things that can be brought to our community. And many projects that want to be in somewhat a little more less populated area, if you will, as long as the workforce can be drawn from around the area that they need, the specialized workforce.
Sure. And is that an advantage that you have a multi-state? You've got Nebraska, South Dakota, and Iowa to draw from. Is that really an advantage for Sioux City and Siouxland because you have the multi-state area from which to draw a labor force?
Well, I think it can be, depending on you know, what sort of businesses are already operating amongst those three states, what kind of workforce, trained workforce, those companies already have in place. And then if you're able to secure a new company that maybe needs a couple of those types of people that obviously are already well-trained, sure. I think, yeah. I mean, it's not as large of a population draw as, say, a Des Moines or the Cedar Rapids, Iowa City area. But I think also in our part of it, when you get more rural, people will drive a little further.
Yep.
For jobs, and that's what our labor shed always shows.
And what do you consider? And I know I mentioned perception there, mm-hmm. about being lonely out on the border, sort of lightheartedly. But there are some major challenges, I would think, that you face. And what do you consider your major challenges in developing business and industry in the Siouxland, Sioux City area?
Okay. Well, you know, and from our standpoint, so the Siouxland Initiative is the economic development arm of the Siouxland Chamber of Commerce, which is regional. So we work, we don't necessarily see the boundaries. We work in our metropolitan statistical area.
Yeah.
So we're all working together. So it's interesting to be working with three different states, five different cities, three different counties. On the federal level, you know, working with 14 different congressmen and senators, that's also a plus.
Yes.
So you have a lot of entities that sort of need to buy into the things, the projects that you're doing.
Yep.
But I think it also, the better communication we have with all of those, everyone kind of sees the big picture. And I think that's why we have been able to be successful.
How have you learned to cope, if you have? And you mentioned it earlier that South Dakota doesn't have a state income tax. How does that affect Sioux City and the Siouxland region of Iowa in its development? And is that a major obstacle to overcome?
Well, and again,
I hear you sighing.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting question because, again, you know, we somewhat work regionally. So it makes it a little tough. That is, overall, the business climate, that's tough for the state of Iowa to compete with. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
But Iowa has other things, you know, other advantages maybe that the state of South Dakota doesn't have. So I think when prospects come in, if they hear from all the states and you kind of line up the different things, there are many times when it makes a lot more sense to come to Iowa. Iowa is better about more helping the company get started, so to speak. In South Dakota is more of... you know, we have a great business climate for the long term. Come here, you know, come here.
Sure.
We don't have a lot of things up front to give you, but you'll see after the 5 or 10 years when you're here how this makes sense. So a lot of it depends on the company that's relocating or expanding or even starting as to kind of their needs. And the different states at times offer different advantages.
We're going to be speaking about health care and the special challenges there in just a few minutes. We're going to be bringing on Peter Thurene, who is the president, you know him well out there, president of St. Luke's Hospital in Sioux City. But I want to talk a little bit more about business specifically before we bring him in. What are the anchor industries in Siouxland?
Well, we have, you know, we've always been kind of known for food processing. So we have, and we call Lamar's is considered Siouxland. So Wells Dairy is there. We have Palmer Candy. We have meat, you know, processing. We have in our area. So Jolly Time Popcorn or American Popcorn. So we kind of know that very well.
Mm-hmm. And you had some setbacks there, too. A couple of months ago, maybe a little bit longer, a meat processing company got caught up in the national negative publicity about a technique in processing ground beef that dramatically reduced production of that product, and they had to trim their labor force in your area. How is that affecting unemployment in your region?
Actually, obviously a very unfortunate incident and unwarranted, but I would say that our unemployment numbers are still right at 5 or a little below 5%.
Mm-hmm.
So not greatly affected. Obviously, those who were downsized because of it were greatly affected. And
I want to also speak about higher education before our time is up here. You have, I was just trying to inventory what you've got. You have Western Iowa Community College. You have Dort, Morningside that immediately come to mind. And then outside that region, a few more. Does being near a state border affect those schools in any way?
I guess I don't know that it does. I guess I wouldn't be able to answer that.
Are they?
I haven't heard concerns or the other way.
What sort of an asset are they to you?
Oh, they're a huge asset. One of the things, you know, prospects always kind of want to know what's the education system, both at the elementary and secondary and then at the college level, college university level. You know, what access is there to training? And Western Iowa Tech has been just a wonderful partner in workforce training for many years. And they're always at the table when we, you know, bring in a prospect. And the you know, the prospects will give us feedback of how important that is to know that if they, you know, start here or expand here, that there is a way to continue to train their employees or retrain them as new skills are needed.
You have beautifully developed the riverfront there. I always admire when I'm in Sioux City your waterfront area, and that was flooded a year ago at this time. But that area is being rebuilt now. Maybe it's already rebuilt. What's the status?
Well, yes, things are coming along well. The the city of Sioux City on the Iowa side, the city of South Sioux City on their side, have really made great strides. And on the South Dakota side, which that's the residential community that really was hit the hardest, they've been full steam ahead trying to bring that back up to par, if you will. Mm-hmm. While it was a tragic during last summer, I mean, people were out of their homes for 4 and 5 months. You really saw the community come together and say, we don't care what side of the river we're on, we're here to help. And, you know, it's out of adversity, you know, comes strength, and you see cooperation. And it's kind of, you know, what our economic development arm of the chamber and the chamber itself, what we really put forward. I mean, we want all these communities cooperating together. We host this Tri-State Governor's Conference. We host a Tri-State Congressional Forum. I mean, we're still all a region if you just got rid of those borders. So if something good happens for us as a region, that propels us forward.
So you are playing to your strength, too, in that three-state area. Well, maybe it's four-state. I didn't include Minnesota when I mentioned South Dakota, Nebraska, and Iowa. Minnesota is not far away from you either. So you have a joint – you take advantage of that geographical location.
Yes. Yes, yes, we do. and it really does help, because when you do think about, you know, a stone's throw, you know, not a stone's throw because I couldn't throw one that far, but across the river here, South Sioux City, Nebraska, I could see it from my office.
Well, and Sarah Palin, you know, could see Russia from Alaska. You could see Minnesota from Sioux City.
Yeah, I can almost see that from here.
Do you market health care, too? I'm getting into that area because Peter Thurene is going to be with us now in just a minute or two. Do you market health care, and do you have special challenges there as a chamber?
Well, we do market health care, if you mean when we meet with prospects. People also want to know about that. And to be able to say we have, you know, the two community hospitals, we have specialty hospitals all around. I mean, this is a wonderful place for health care. I mean, specialists from all over the country have relocated here. So it's top-notch
quality.
Tell
me more about that. You say from all areas of the country have relocated there because of health care?
No, I'm saying we have those specialties,
yes.
Endocrinology, neurology, all that. Those doctors have come in from all over the place to work here in our area.
Is there something special that draws them there?
I'm not quite sure.
Well, let's bring Peter Thurene on.
He's
president of St. Luke's. He's on the line here with us. Mr. Thurene, how are you?
Good afternoon. Good to be with you.
Answer that question, if you will. Is there something special that would draw physicians into that Siouxland area?
Well, I think we have a lot of great physician practices, and we have very good hospitals. So I think we're attractive to all specialties. It's a challenge recruiting. Everybody's recruiting physicians and top talent, so we're on that all the time. But as Barbara said, we have a very excellent complement of medical services here in our tri-state area.
We're going to be talking more with you, Mr. Thurene, about the special challenges, though, you have with the South Dakota area specifically, and we come back from our break. We're going to say goodbye to Barbara right now. Thank you, Ms. Sloniker.
Thank you, Dean.
Nice talking with you.
All right.
We'll be back after the news and be talking with Peter Thurene, the president of St. Luke's Hospital, and then with some friends across the state from the Quad Cities. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio. Dean Borg continuing River to River. And in our last segment, we were talking with folks in Sioux City and had Peter Thurene on the line with us. He continues now, and we're going to be asking him about some specific problems that he has being in the border community of Sioux City as it relates to neighbors over in South Dakota. Mr. Thurene is president of St. Luke's Hospital in Sioux City. Now, Mr. Thurene, as I understand it, the Certificate of Need law is what's in question here, and I'll tell what that is. We're right on that, aren't we?
Yeah, that's one of the border issues that we have, because in the state of Iowa, there is still, through the state, a state certificate of need which regulates certain capital expenditures in health care, and South Dakota doesn't have that requirement.
And that certificate of need, just for those who are listening and aren't familiar with that term, it's a process among health care providers, and it's a state law in Iowa, a process designed to control health care costs by preventing what would be considered unnecessary overbuilding among hospitals and other health services. It requires approval for developing new services, and Iowa's Certificate of Need is administered by the Iowa Department of Public Health. I'm right on that?
Yeah, that's correct.
Now, you're caught in a situation where Iowa has that Certificate of Need law. South Dakota doesn't. Is it just freewheeling in South Dakota then? You want to build a new hospital, you just go ahead and do it.
Well, it is pretty freewheeling, and I believe Nebraska is pretty open also. I think they may have some additional requirements. But states license hospitals, and so each state makes that decision on whether they want to continue what's once a federal program, the Certificate of Need, and Iowa has decided to continue to do that. It's only certain services are regulated for hospitals.
Yes.
We just built we're starting an outpatient facility for outpatient services and clinics, and that doesn't come under Certificate of Need, but many other things do. So
that causes you that Certificate of Need, though, disparity between South Dakota specifically and, you say, Nebraska, causes you a little heartburn there competitively. Tell me about that.
Well, I'm fond of saying that actually, Dean, you and I could go and build a hospital in South Dakota as long as we met the state licensure code. Maybe no one would go to our hospital, but we have the ability to do that, which means physicians can do that. Groups of physicians can build competing hospitals that may compete or duplicate services with community hospitals like ours, and that's the case in South Dakota. In a number of communities, physicians have started up physician-owned specialty hospitals.
And that couldn't be done across the river where you're located in Sioux City?
Well, it could be done, I imagine, if it got through a Certificate of Need and
yes,
and was approved. It hasn't.
But what there's a special situation that affects you directly. Tell me about that.
And there's two or three factors. Each state has a different licensure code for hospitals. South Dakota tends to have less requirements on what a licensed hospital needs to provide. Iowa's a bit stricter. As an example, in Iowa, you need to have an emergency room. In South Dakota, you do not need to have an emergency room, and there's a history of why that is the case in South Dakota.
Well, how does that affect you at St. Luke's?
Well, in our case, many of our surgeons that practice in our tri-state area and historically practiced were based in Iowa have moved to South Dakota, both for the tax climate that Barbara was talking about for their practices, as well as being close to what is a specialty hospital. It's called Dakota Dunes Surgical Center. It's a licensed specialty hospital that they own a part of and can refer their patients to, so it's been to their financial advantage to do that. They still come to our hospital. They still are on our staffs, but have created basically a third hospital in town.
So what that, and you have, you say a third hospital in town, you have two hospitals.
In our metro area.
Yes, you have two hospitals in Sioux City proper on the Iowa side of the border, and the other one, this physician-owned hospital, which is across the border in Dune, South Dakota.
It's in South Dakota, and I would maybe argue with Barbara a little bit. You could maybe throw a stone across the Big Sioux River into South Dakota. It's a very, you know, our metro area that's in South Dakota, North Sioux City and Dakota Dunes, very important part of our community. You cross over a short bridge. It's very easy to get to, so it's not like traveling a great distance. It's a great place to live, so physicians also like to live out there. So it's you know, it's caused some concern for community hospitals on our side of the river, just in terms of competition and physicians maybe leaving our campuses and relocating over there.
So what you're saying, I guess, is that patients who doctors practicing in that area and maybe even in the Sioux City, Iowa side of the border would refer their patients, say the patient needs surgery, say they would go and they tell their patients, I want to see you and operate, perform surgery on you at the Dunes, South Dakota hospital, not mentioning the fact that I have a financial interest in that hospital. I'm an part owner of that.
Well, they may or may not, and actually there's a requirement that they do mention that I believe came out of the health reform bill, because especially hospitals were addressed in respect to Medicare policy in that that legislation. So they may inform them, but physicians, if I'm going to trust my surgeon and physician, so they have a lot of sway and say about where a patient might go for that surgery.
Yep. Is that costing you patient census?
Yeah, it's the timing, I think, has been difficult because we have not had any significant population growth since that additional hospital was added.
So the pie of patients is not getting any bigger, but there are more people eating at the pie.
Right. It's, caused more competition, and I think if you had a large population growth, it would not have as much of an impact. But not only do we not have a large population growth, but we also have competition from Omaha and Sioux Falls that causes some of our regional referrals to leave us also.
Does the new Federal Health Affordability Act provide any relief to you?
Well, actually, yes, it did. Part of that legislation did put some limits on the growth and expansion of physician-owned specialty hospitals. It allowed existing licensed and certified hospitals to continue. It did put some limitations on their growth, and it did stop a new additional physician-owned specialty hospitals to be certified under Medicare. And that's very significant because no hospital would want to operate without being able to see Medicare patients.
Have you in any way quantified how much healthcare business, that situation you are describing there, has diverted from your hospital in Sioux City, St. Luke's, to the hospital across the river in South Dakota?
Well, we know in general what level of business that hospital does, and it's, certainly over $20 million, maybe over $30 million. And I think the significant thing is, historically those revenues, we worked with those physicians, those revenues were in the community hospital model, financial model, and that helped us carry out our overall mission. So it's just definitely tougher losing some of that revenue to carry on our larger mission, because we have to see more than surgery patients. We have to see medical patients be there 24 hours a day, have the ER, have the NICU for premature babies. So that part has been a challenge. We would have, liked to have kept that more of that surgical business within our community hospital model.
One last question. Are you more prone to providing emergency care to patients who need care but can't afford it because of that situation?
Well, they don't have an emergency room over there, so they don't.
So you get the emergency patients.
Yeah, they stay in our two community hospitals in Sioux City. Mm-hmm. And that's again, goes back to licensure codes. Every state can be different. Most payers will pay regardless of where the hospital is, whether it's private insurance or government insurance, but states legislate licensure codes for hospitals, so it can vary if your hospital is across the border.
Mr. Thurene, thanks so much for describing that to us. That's insightful and something that I think most of us didn't realize is a special challenge in being in that border community where you are.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks so much. We're going to bring on now, we're going across the state actually, and going to be talking with Tara Barney, the Chief Executive Officer of the Quad Cities Chamber of Commerce, about the very special advantages of being in the Quad Cities area along the Mississippi, and maybe some challenges. The Quad Cities, Tara?
Good afternoon.
Is about 400,000, isn't it?
That's a good way to look at it, just even 400,000. We're technically a little under that in the MSA, but in our labor shed, we're certainly 400,000.
And your largest cities, you can name them, Davenport, Middendorf, and you go ahead.
Well, you know, you put me on a spot because actually there's 53 cities in our region. But Davenport is the largest. Bettendorf, Rock Island, and Moline are all in comparable sizes.
Yes.
East Moline,
yes.
Silvis, Cordova, and then the list goes on.
Wow.
In Scott
yes.
County, Eldridge is the third largest city.
So you really have a large metropolitan area there, and you've worked to merge the business communities under one chamber umbrella. I don't know if it includes all of those municipalities, but it includes the major ones, doesn't it?
It does. Actually, we serve technically our service area is a four-county region, so Scott County in Iowa and Rock Island, Henry, and Mercer counties in Illinois, which was the historic region of the chambers that merged.
Mm-hmm. Now, that is a job in itself because before, you competed against each other, didn't you?
We did, and we, in my opinion, misused quite a few resources doing just that.
In what way?
Well, you know, you find yourself trying to be a little better at a program you offer so you can challenge the other organizations that are in the immediate vicinity. And the difficulty with that is our businesses were supporting both organizations.
Hmm.
And, you know, when you get into times of scarce resources, you have to stop and rethink how valuable that is when the real competition is the rest of the world.
How did you get people to put aside competitive traits and to say we can all operate under one umbrella toward one goal? Is that even possible?
Oh, my. Well, this is only a one-hour show, right? actually, it was a process that was many years in the making, but we found ourselves 3 years ago now in a situation where there were lots of folks that were ready to look at a different equation. The Quad Cities had been surviving, but many people would say not thriving at the level that it might. And we had some leadership that was at a very thoughtful zenith, I'd say. And they said, let's just sit down and see what we can agree on. And let's agree that not everything is going to fit into the new model, but let's find those things that do and that we can work on together. And so that was, I think, the different approach from earlier efforts, which might have been a little more trying to do everything in one fell swoop.
Tara, I'm going to pause right now to ask listeners who may have been listening to our conversations across the state in Sioux City and now listening to you on the Mississippi side of the state, to call in if they have some special comments about what they have heard or some special stories to tell about being in the border communities. The number to call, if you have a comment or two, 866-780-9100, or perhaps you have a question or comment for Tara Barney, who is the Chief Executive Officer of the Quad Cities Chamber of Commerce, with whom we're speaking right now. Tara, does the Quad Cities region, though, have some special advantages in across-the-border cooperation, such as, you know, you've got Interstate 80 and I-74 interstate connections there. You have several bridges there expediting transportation across the Mississippi, and you have made a big stride in redeveloping downtown Davenport and Rock Island.
Very true. If you look at the things that we think are unique advantages of the Quad City regions, first of all, it is our location, because our logistics system is very strong. As you've mentioned, we actually have 5 bridge crossings. We want more, we want better, but we do have pretty good fluidity between the two halves of our community. The Mississippi River is an extraordinary asset, and the city of Davenport and Rock Island have been nationally recognized many times, including recently, for the work they've done in repurposing the communities to really make the river the centerpiece. And that's had its own intangible benefits, because those two cities now look at each other with favor and have a pretty nice view. And so if you're a Rock Islander, you say, gee, the best view of Rock Island is from Davenport, and vice versa.
And the gambling industry has been a catalyst there, too. I think we'd have to say that the riverboats have really helped you revitalize the downtown area in Davenport. Now, the laws there make it such that Iowa has the advantage on that, don't they?
Yeah, if you look at the equation as far as where the proceeds flow, Iowa does have a little more advantageous structure for the use of the proceeds. And so having the nonprofit element in the gaming structure in Iowa is a huge advantage, not just for our community, but throughout the state. But you're right. You know, when Riverboat Gaming started, Davenport and Bettendorf were early players, and the nonprofits have been extraordinarily thoughtful and, I would say, great stewards of making sure those resources help to differently position our river edges, and so our downtowns. And, yeah, you come to downtown Davenport. I've been in this community 10 years, and the transition in those 10 years is a story to tell.
Reminisce with me just a bit. I'm trying to draw on my memory here. Downtown Davenport and that general area, I've been over there covering some flood from time to time.
Yeah.
In fact, just a year ago, I think.
We think of that as river encroachment, but yeah.
Well, all right, river encroachment. I'll go with the politically Quad City term, politically correct. But Davenport has rejected, to the best of my knowledge, building flood walls because they don't want to block what they consider to be, and you have just stated, the Mississippi River as an asset. Now, is that still the general philosophy there?
Very much, and I think the city of Davenport is appropriately proud of that. If you spend time in the eastern Iowa communities, especially Davenport, you'll know there's a bluff relationship. And so you can be in Davenport and almost have this intangible sense that you can see where the river is, even when you aren't actually seeing it. But you know there's a line through the core streets in the Davenport community that take you down to the river, and it is a huge quality of life advantage that I think Davenport recognized early on and now has worked with the Corps, and they've done the cost-benefit analysis, and I think that you're going to see across the country a lot of communities that have flood circumstances considering the Davenport approach as a more practical option, because the equation of maintaining flood walls and the pumping systems behind that is a very expensive equation. And one that sooner or later is going to be challenged.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that that's working well? I know you had an experiment with it, as I say, just last year, I believe I was over there covering some flooded areas, and you have a ballpark area that floods first, if I recall.
It used to, and now the area around our ballpark does flood, but it floods in the, you know, kind of inches and feet range. It's not ever a raging situation.
So what you're saying is
it's surrounded now with a great wall, and you can play ball in there.
It's something you can live with then.
Yeah. It's actually very manageable, and it comes over time. So when we have floods in the Mississippi, we know they're coming. And so it lets us prepare and keep businesses running, keep the quality of life in our community pretty well balanced, and, you know, our civic leaders have done an extraordinary job in figuring out how to manage the system.
Tara, I invited listeners, and we have Charles calling from Moline. I think he has a question for you. Go ahead, Charles.
Hello, I live in East Moline, and you're probably going to tell me to take it up with my city council, but how come we can't get more restaurants on the Illinois side? John Deere, they have a huge Menards. They have a huge expansion around it, and we, as it turns out now, we have to go to Bettendorf, 53rd Street, for all our restaurants.
Now here,
that
here
bugs
we,
me
here
because we can't have more restaurants in Illinois.
Take a deep breath, Tara.
No, I'll be happy to give you my perspective or my judgment on that. It is very much associated with a few things, one of which is traffic counts, which in some places in Illinois are the best in the Quad Cities, and I'll use John Deere Parkway as an example of that. But it really comes down to concentrations of demographics. And, you know, restaurants tend to cluster in groups, and they are often led by that combination of traffic counts and demographics. So I share your pain on that because it is a challenge for specific communities, especially because in the Illinois Quad Cities, the sales tax is very significant to city government's revenues. And so when Illinoisans come to Iowa to spend their discretionary dollars at their favorite restaurant, that is great for Iowa, but it's a real challenge as we try to balance growth throughout our region. So, Chuck, I know I didn't answer your question about how come, but I would say that a lot of it has to do with the actual, you know, kind of discretionary income opportunities that are available in different parts of the community, because most restaurants are looking at an
audience within a mile or two of where they're located.
And, Charles, she just got through saying the number of bridges you have to get back and forth across the river. So I think you're okay.
I still want to point out that John Deere has really grown. There's development around John Deere that is, I think, as good as Bettendorf.
Absolutely. You're right. And if I could just, Jeff, do you mind if I continue here?
You can for just a few seconds because
I think one of our challenges in the region is making sure that we support that growth. And John Deere is a huge employer and will start to mitigate that challenge, I think, in the near term.
Thank you, Charles, for calling with that question and comment. Well, that ends our program today, and thanks so much, Tara, for being with us. Tara Barney, who is the Chief Executive Officer of the Quad Cities Chamber of Commerce. River to River, produced by Alex Hoyer and Catherine Perkins. This program is specifically produced by Jeff Schmidt, who is also our executive producer. Technical support from Dennis Reese and Jason Burns. River to River is produced by Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Dean Borg, and thanks for joining us today. Thank you.